This week on the BOAG World Show, Nathan Ellering from CoSchedule shares his top tips for social media strategy. This week's show is sponsored by Gather Content and Resource Guru. Hello and welcome to the BOAG World Show, a podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul BOAG. Joining me this week, as always, is Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. I've got my tea finally.
Good. Good. Because I was worried about that. I know how important that is to you.
Especially in the afternoon, Paul, me being an Englishman and whatnot.
Whatnot. Yeah, I don't feel like I feel like I'm letting down my entire nation by not liking tea.
Well, you don't like coffee either, do you? So.
No. So at least I'm not American or Italian or whoever.
Hot drinks of any sort, Paul?
I will partake in hot chocolate.
Oh, that's a nice thing. A bit too sickly after a while, though.
It can do, yeah. Too mm-hmm. much. Talking of too sickly, I will also drink hot cider.
Oh, no, that, oh, when I don't like cider, I probably mentioned this before, but I can remember probably when I was about, I don't know, 20 or so, saying to myself, I must learn to like things like Stilton cheese.
Yeah.
And cigars and stuff like that, you know, things that are meant to be just the
grown up things.
Yes, and I realised that I don't like either of those things. No, that's not true. I like Stilton cheese, but don't like cigars. But cider was another one that I thought, I must like cider. Everyone likes cider, but I don't like it at all. And the hot version, I think, smells and tastes like vomit.
Yeah, I kind of know what you mean. And I can actually give you that. And the other thing that I do quite like, but I can't cope with the smell of, talking of that, is mulled wine.
I'd rather just have wine again.
Well, no, I quite like mulled wine. My it's problem right. was, you see, I worked in a restaurant when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And come Christmas, we would make mulled wine and sell mulled wine. Yep. But of course, you're making it on such a scale that we would make huge vats of the stuff. Yes. And the smell was just overpowering. And I just can't cope with it as a result. I've overdosed on the smell of mulled wine.
Yeah, that's another one. I'll drink it, but, you know, it's like, can I just have the wine, please?
Yeah.
Take the mulled bit out of it.
Yeah, but it is nice to have something warm, especially this time of year. It's looking
We're getting all
gray.
Festive, aren't we? Aren't we, Paul?
Yes, we are. This is true.
It's well, 7 weeks to Christmas.
I've already had my present.
Have you?
Yeah, I got my shiny.
Of course, yes.
I got my shiny iPhone X.
Yes, or I've ordered
10.
Mine.
Oh, have you? Oh, good.
Yeah, yes, it'll be coming at the end of the month.
Ooh!
But I played with Dan's a bit today, and I thought, yes, actually, it's rather lovely. I do like the big screen on the same size phone that I've currently got. That's
yes, it is rather good. I have to say, I really like it. I've written a blog post that's gone out today. Not really, it's not really about the iPhone, but it's about some user experience lessons relating and wrapped around the iPhone. So things like, you know, the
don't design a phone with a notch in it. There's...
Do you know, that actually doesn't matter when you actually
I think it does if you're designing phone, if you're designing websites for it.
Well, it took me... Well, one line of code to fix that for BOAG World.
Okay.
It literally, it's just a bit of metadata you've got to throw in. I mean, I suppose it depends on the design of your website.
Yeah.
But in my case, it made no difference whatsoever. It was really, really simple and straightforward to fix, which was great. But I was writing about things like how big a deal Face ID is. Because it really is an enormous thing. Because you know what? You don't necessarily notice the points of friction in an interaction until those points of friction are taken away, right?
100%, yes. This is the demonstration that Dan did earlier that I was most impressed with. But carry on, Paul.
Yeah, so you literally just pick up your phone and use it, yeah. Right? You know, and it unlocks itself and it does all the security checks, but you don't think about that. You know, you don't have to put your thumb on a button or anything like that. It just does it. But the bit that really, I think, where Face ID made the biggest difference for me, which was just a delight when it first happened, is I went to a website where I have to log in. And it was a website that I previously logged in at some point. Yeah. And it just popped up with the Face ID message, just briefly, long enough for me to go, oh, why is it doing that? And then it logged me in.
Yay.
And it was like, I'm in the website and I haven't had to type anything. I've not had to press any buttons. I've not had to do anything. I'm just there. And that whole thing about making the interaction invisible, you know, they always say, don't they? There's the saying, the best interface is no interface. And that this really is that. It's the it just goes away. It gets out of your way. And that's just really lovely. And
even isn't it funny? Because that was we were talking about this for the last 2-3 weeks. And I'm like, Face ID, meh, probably won't work properly.
Yeah.
Or even if it does, it'll just be like, yeah, so what? But isn't it funny the things that kind of strike you the most? Because Dan was showing it to Chris, holding it, or had it on the desk or something. He was holding it in his hand, but kind of pointing it at Chris.
Yeah.
And Chris was looking at the phone, and it was locked. And he just tilted it towards himself, and it just opened. And it's like, now that's good.
And the other thing, of course, is notifications on the lock screen. That, you know, if Chris had been, you know, Dan had received a notification while Chris was looking at it, the notification wouldn't have appeared. But as soon as Dan looked at it, he would have seen the notification.
Yeah.
You know, so it's things like that. But also even like the removal of the home button, that surprised me. I mean, I suffered from some muscle memory problems for a while. In fact, I still am actually a little bit of going for the button that's not there. But setting that aside, interacting directly with the interface rather than a separate hardware button just feels so nice and so fluid, and especially combined with, I mean, it's got one hell of a processor behind it on this phone, so it's so fluid, and you know, all the animations are instantaneous and natural, and they've added just a little bit of haptic feedback at various places as well. That's just, it feels like a natural interaction with it. So I've got to say, the actual iPhone itself was just a pleasure. Of course, getting the iPhone was a disaster.
Really?
Oh.
I thought we talked about this last week, but obviously not, because I can't remember what the story was.
Well, no, I just said that, all I said last week was the long and short of it is I got up like a fanboy at 8 o'clock to order it exactly on time.
That's really early for you, Paul.
I know. I might as well have got up in the middle of the night. and I ordered it within, I don't know, a couple of minutes, but I didn't manage to get the 3rd of November delivery date, which was when it was coming out.
Right.
So, you know, being the petulant child that I was, I didn't want to wait a week. You know, that's not me, is it? So, you know, I mentioned this on Twitter or on Slack, actually. It was on the Slack channel. And somebody said, oh, Carphone Warehouse are saying they can deliver it by the 3rd of November. Okay, so I went to the Carphone Warehouse site. And sure enough, on the homepage, it said in big, bold letters, you know, delivered by the 3rd of November.
So you didn't believe them, did you?
Well, I placed an order straight away. You know, because I figured I can always cancel it, can't I? And I kept the order as well with Apple just as a backup. But no, I didn't believe that they would do it. And so and then sure enough, I got a confirmation email that instead of saying delivered by the 3rd of November, said expected delivery 3rd of November. Right? So the wording suddenly changed. Yeah, exactly. So again, you're beginning to see some kind of user experience lessons here in terms of kind of consistent wording and, you know, setting expectations and all of that kind of stuff. Then I contacted or tweeted. Well, I didn't want to pick up the phone and call them on the day that the iPhone was being released. I knew that it would just be a nightmare. So I tweeted instead because they didn't seem to have a live chat or anything like that. And I got through to somebody replied to me and said, But it was a gay, it was a canned response, right?
Which we all love. We love a canned response.
Exactly. So I asked, is my order, here's my order number, is it going to be delivered on the 3rd of November? Instead, what I get back is a canned response saying, our current expected delivery date is the 10th of November.
Ooh.
Well, does that apply to me as someone that's already ordered it, or were you just sending out a canned response to anybody? So again, rubbish user experience. So it goes on, and I wait as the week goes by, and I think, well, you know, I'll just see what happened, kinds of thing. And come Thursday, so the day before it was supposed to be released, I still hadn't heard from them. No email. Nothing saying, see, in the original email, they said, we will contact you if we can't deliver it, you know, by the expected date. Well, hang on a minute. Twitter tells me you're not going to be able to, but I haven't heard anything. What's going on here? You know, don't know. So I reluctantly pick up the phone, ring them up, and was told my current order is set to deliver on the 10th of November. Okay. Right. So, and then literally an hour after getting off the phone, I then get a your order has been dispatched notice.
Ooh.
And so I did. It turned up on the 3rd. But what a terrible user experience. You know, poor communication. There was no way I could log into the website to see my order. There was no way to cancel my order online. I would have had to have rung somebody. There was no information, no communication in terms of where my order was at, whether it was going to be fulfilled or not. Absolute joke. So, bah.
But you don't mind that much because you got it on the day.
Well, absolutely.
When they said you'd get it.
Well, I don't mind because I've got a gorgeous new phone at the end of it. But that is pretty. It shows, for me, I thought that was a really quite an interesting. I'm going to be using that example, you know, when I talk about user experience, because it really shows you how user experience is a lot more than just the user interface. You know, it's a lot more than just going to the website and buying something, isn't it? You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's all the other stuff too. And, you know, even things like that wording example of the website said will be delivered and then the email said expected by, you know, that makes a big
difference.
I think
that's deliberate though. I think that's covering their asses.
But then why on the website give it as a guaranteed?
Because they want your sale.
Yeah,
I don't know, I'm probably going to get sued by Cartphone Warehouse now, but no, I mean, maybe you could argue that, you know, more positive wording on the website will encourage sales. You know, you could even say that one department has been studying the wording to get more people to click on the buy button. And if we use this sort of wording, which is fine, they say to themselves, it works. And then when it comes to the kind of the department that's dealing with delivery, they're, well, can't guarantee it for that date, so we're going to use slightly kind of
and therein lies the problem, isn't it, that yes. These departments don't talk to one another, they don't interact with one another, which is great for me because that's what I spend my life fixing these days.
There you go. So it gets you more work, Paul.
Exactly, which pays for my shiny iPhone, which is wonderful.
It's a big circle.
Anyway, we've just spent but at best part of a quarter of an hour talking about me buying an iPhone. Well, actually, it's not that.
We'll look forward to the end of the month when I get mine.
Yeah. You know, you'll enjoy it. It's a good phone. The camera is everything that you hope it is. So that's good. All right. So today we're going to be talking about social media, which is very appropriate as we've already started talking about social media and interactions on Twitter. We got Nathan for Co-Schedule joining us. This is a good interview, isn't it, Marcus? You were on this one, so it made it all the better, obviously, having you there.
And I made lots of promises, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, have you done any of them?
I've thought about it, and I don't mean that in a kind of like as a throwaway kind of way. I have actually kind of thought, right, I mean to do that, 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 and that. I haven't done any of them yet, but I'm planning, okay?
Oh, okay, no, that's progress.
So, you know, when did we do the interview? It was only like 2 working days ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long. So we didn't know whether we were going to have an interview on this show, but Nathan kindly stepped in, and you know what a fan I am of Co-Schedule, so it was really great to have him on the show. And what I've decided next week is we're not going to do an interview next week, and instead, following up really on the promises that you made, I thought I would take you through everything I do in an average week from a content marketing point of view. just to kind of give you a framework of the kind of stuff that, you know, you could be doing potentially. I'm not saying you do the same as me, Marcus, but I just thought you might find it interesting and other people might find it interesting.
We talk about marketing calendars, don't we, in the interview that's coming up, and there's to have an example of that would be great. Yes, yeah. Perfect.
Good. Right. But before we get into the interview, I just want to let's do our sponsor first, actually. Let's quickly talk about Resource Guru, and then we'll do some reading material around social media, and then we'll jump into the interview. So, Resource Guru. So, we all know how painful it can be if we don't quite manage to schedule things properly. We end up working late, and we work weekends, and deadlines are suddenly looming, and we end up having to sometimes even pick up the workload of other people because they haven't been able to schedule right, or they've gone away on holiday. And yeah, it's horrible, isn't it? Deadlines really can catch you off guard. What's that great Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Douglas Adams. Yeah. I love the sound of deadlines as they go whooshing by or something like that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he had such a good phrase. But obviously you can't let that happen unless you're an internationally famous writer like him who can afford to miss his deadlines. But most of us don't have that privilege. So if that kind of pressure and scheduling problem sounds familiar, then you may well want to check out Resource Guru, which is a fast and really simple way of managing your projects. So it gives you an accurate, up-to-date view of the big picture of who's busy, who's available, who's away from work, all those kinds of things. So you can kind of be confident about your project timelines, whether they're realistic or not, whether you're going to have the right resources at the right time, because you know projects shift around, don't they? And you also get great features like absence management when people are not around. You can track billable versus non-billable hours, and you have a really good utilization set of reports as well, which is nice for kind of working out whether you've got the right number of people and whether you're working in the right kind of way. So it's used by lots of successful teams, some really big people like Apple, NASA, Ogilvy, and even the NHS use it, which I thought was kind of cool. I love
that.
Yeah.
Really?
How cutting edge are the NHS?
They're not very, but no. Okay.
I know. Well, I'm kind of shocked, if I'm honest, that they're on the list, but apparently they are. So there you go. I don't imagine it's the entire NHS.
Yeah.
No, that's really good. And NASA, that sounds cool as well. Well, if NASA use it, then, you know, do you guys
then,
still
then
use
then
it?
Then Headscape should use it.
We do. You already do, don't you? Yeah, I thought you did.
Using it for a long time.
Yeah, I love the fact that you weren't quite sure about that. It shows how much you're involved in running projects these days. It's all been taken away from you, isn't it, thankfully?
Yeah, mostly.
Emma is in charge of
Emma is in charge of that sort of thing, yes.
So if you fancy a free trial of Resource Guru, go to resourceguru.io/BoagWorld. And if you subscribe using the coupon code BOAG2017, you'll get 20% off the life of the account, right? So as long as you use it, you'll get 20% off, which I think is a really good deal. Right, so you know that every show I'm trying to give you a little bit of reading, really, not resources that you can find out more about the different things that we're covering. And as we're talking about covering social media these days, I've got some stuff that you might want to check out. One that I refer to all the time is the Buffer blog. So that's blog.bufferapp.com. And they're always posting thoughts on kind of social media and its use. So, you know, things like looking at the conversion and ROI of social media, or getting started with Instagram, or I'm just looking down the homepage, all kinds of level up your social media skills. And oh, they've started a podcast. Ooh, that might be quite interesting. I like those guys. Anyway, sorry. Yes, yeah, so there's the Buffer blog. Check out that blog.bufferapp.com. Another one that I came across, which looks quite good, is called Dustin TV, and it's DUSTN.TV. So it's kind of /blog, sorry, which seems to have a really good collection of kind of social media blogging and design articles. So it's got some great stuff on everything from Pinterest to sizing social media images, which we talked about last week, to email lists, any other kind of content marketing type stuff you'll find on that blog. And it's got some really good articles. I've really had a, enjoyed having a look through there. So that's another one to check out. The other one that I wanted to mention is sociallysorted.com.au/blog. So this is AU, Australian. And again, loads of really great, concise, very easy to digest articles on all aspects of social media, even including things like podcasting, social video, imagery, Instagram again, the whole works really. Everything from, you know, even how to create a great Facebook page, that kind of stuff. So loads of stuff to get you started there. And yeah, hopefully you'll find some stuff that is really useful amongst that little lot.
Cool.
All right, should we jump into our interview with Nathan and kind of go from there?
Let's do that.
So joining us today is Nathan from CoSchedule. Nathan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thanks to you guys for having me. This is, well, I'm pretty excited. This is going to be fun.
Well, I'm pretty excited as well because I've been using CoSchedule since, I think it was in beta, because I had, for a very long time, I had one of your grandfathered accounts that I was holding on to because it was, you know, this amazing value and I was doing really well out of it. And then recently you released a solo kind of entrepreneurial package, which was even better. And so I've signed up for that one now.
Nice. Yeah, that's I'm really glad to hear that. Actually, I mean, you are one of the really early birds then, like, 3-4 years ago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's because, just for people that don't know what CoSchedule is, and we're not going to spend the whole time talking about CoSchedule because these guys have very kindly agreed to sponsor some episodes later, so you'll get to hear a lot more about it later. But essentially, CoSchedule is a tool for managing content marketing, really, everything from the blog posts that you send out to the social media updates. But for me, what kind of really originally got me on board with it was the fact that it gave me this lovely editorial calendar where I could schedule all of the various bits and bobs that I end up having going out, because I've got the podcast, I've got blog posts, I've got social media updates, and you kind of want to link your social media updates to go out at the right time with the blog posts and the podcast. But then I've got newsletters as well, and that all needs to be kind of managed. And so essentially, CoSchedule brings that all together into a single calendar, and it integrated into WordPress, which for me was just kind of the icing on the cake. But since then, I mean, it's grown so much. You've added so much. I mean, the requeue feature that you offer now, where you can essentially set social media updates to go out on like a cycle, that's just so useful.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I couldn't have explained it better.
Oh, well,
that's
there you go.
Really good. Well, and yeah, we are really excited about requeue. That thing is just like such an interesting feature. And actually, you know, since you're talking about being a customer as far as beta, that was something that we had been requested, or it's been like percolating in our minds for years. Mm. So we are excited to launch that finally.
Mm. And I mean, you know, let's be honest. It's quite similar to the functionality provided by Buffer, which is I'm guessing one of your competitors, kind of. You overlap a little bit with them. But for me, it's so much nicer to have it all together in one tool, because obviously Buffer don't do the editorial calendar side of things. And so it just makes life so much easier. And also, I guess the difference between what requeue and Buffer is that you can reuse the same updates again and again, because on Twitter especially, if you just post stuff once, nobody ever sees it.
Yeah, I would say that for sure for Twitter, that's something that requeue does really well with. And to your point, like something that you can do with CoSchedule is what I like to do is look at the engagement on certain messages. Like let's say I send a tweet and like 10 of them fall flat, but one of them is really, really good, gets a lot of engagement. I'll just like make sure to throw that one into our requeue so that we recycle that one.
Yeah.
And it's just a smart way to be like, hey, I'm going to use data to say, if this one was successful in the past, chances of it being successful in the future are pretty high.
Yeah.
And that's, anyway, that's a pretty good use case for it.
It is. It's a very good one. I mean, that brings us on actually to one of the first questions that I wanted to ask you. Because, I mean, obviously you guys have huge amounts of experience working in the social media field and seeing what works and what doesn't. And to the point of Twitter, the need to repost things on a regular basis, it seems like there are so many different platforms out there from, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, if does anybody ever still use that, I don't know, Instagram, you know, all Pinterest, all of these different platforms. It's very hard, you know, if you're kind of coming into this and thinking about your social media strategy, which platforms do you support? Yeah, I mean, do you try and support them all? And if not, then which platforms should you be focusing on? Which platforms are good for what kind of jobs, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. And they're like, the very first thing that I kind of advocate is like, do one thing at a time and... you know, focus on one thing. I think as marketers, it's really easy for us to think that we need to do everything, especially with all the information that's coming out in this industry. It's like every single day there are literally hundreds of thousands of articles published, and every day you're learning like, oh, I need to be doing this thing, I need to be doing that thing. And I think that's almost doing a disservice to marketers everywhere because we think that we need to constantly be doing the new shiny thing when really what we should be doing is concentrating our efforts on something that we know already works.
Yeah.
And so like as far as that goes, like the advice I'd have to begin with is to do one thing at a time so that you don't spread yourself too thin. And what another part of that is like to target the right kinds of followers, not just all followers. Mm-hmm. So like if you only have limited time, just kind of think about your audience that you're building already and just kind of like something that you can do is if you have even a minimal customer base right now, is you can literally just send an email with like a one question survey that says, hey, what social network do you most often use to find out information about this kind of product or, you know, what you're doing, like our industry information. So that's what I kind of advocate at first, at least.
So, I mean, obviously each platform seems to have its own little quirks. Is there certain things to bear in mind in terms of which platforms are better for what, if that makes sense? So, I mean, the obvious example is the 140 character limit on Twitter, which means that, you know, anything longer form doesn't work very well on Twitter. And you know, but are there other kind of preferences that you have of what platforms you use for what type of content?
Yeah, definitely. So like if we're thinking about, you know, if I were to give a rundown, like Twitter, since we were talking about that first, like I like to use Twitter to share like useful business tips. CoSchedule is B2B, so that's something that we do is like some helpful tips to help attract that following to us. We use Twitter to show just a little bit of personality too. Tweets only live for like 15 seconds, so it's fine to do a lot of MVPs or minimum viable tests there. Something like quotes and standalone graphics work really well. Animation works well, so if you can share GIFs or video there, the motion in busy newsfeed stands out. There's actually a lot of evidence to suggest that like images get 150% more retweets on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Animated GIFs get 167% more click-throughs. And it, like you were talking about with character count, we've actually done a ton of research at CoSchedule on the mechanics behind writing for all these networks. And it looks like, you know, writing your message to about 115 characters will get you the most engagement on those.
Mm-hmm.
And then using two hashtags per tweet can help you grow that engagement by 21%.
Ah, interesting. Because I'm terrible. I never use hashtags at all. And I know they make a bit difference, but somehow I think I'm too verbose. So by the time I've written my, you know, characters, I haven't got enough space left for any hashtags.
Well, you can always sneak them in. Like, something that I do is, like, I'll actually write the message, and then if I use the word marketing in the message, then I'll just, like, oh, I'm turning that into a hashtag.
Yeah.
And the reason for Twitter being good with hashtags is, like, it's a discovery engine. Like, people will use hashtags to discover content versus other networks kind of just use them to categorize. Mm-hmm. So, use hashtags on Twitter. It can help you attract people who might not otherwise find your brand.
Mm. What about LinkedIn? You know, if CoSchedule's a B2B network, you know, a service, then you kind of think that LinkedIn may be the way to go. But that's a kind of a bit of a peculiar one. I'm never quite sure what to do with LinkedIn.
Yeah, there's, you know, we use LinkedIn to share business, industry news, thought leadership content. Mm-hmm. You know, it is very much a B2B audience that would work really well for you there. So you can think about sharing your case studies, maybe some of your how-to articles, mm-hmm. Even stuff like how to grow professionally as a professional or business in that niche mm-hmm. specifically could do well there. So, you know, mm-hmm. something that we've kind of found too is like, link posts with images and short messages, really work well as far as like actually creating the message, mm-hmm. just since we were talking about Twitter and the actual message creation there, that sort of stuff does extremely well on LinkedIn.
Of course, the problem with all of this is it all takes time, especially if you're going to start kind of trying to customize what you're posting to different networks. And this is the thing, Marcus, you moan about all the time, that you just don't really have time for this kind of stuff.
At least you're doing something, Paul. Yeah, you're doing a lot. I'm here on this interview with Nathan as a bit of a Luddite, really. And I've already learned a lot. And I know that the kind of value of marketing our company through social media is high, but I'm always, you know, I write the old blog post, but it's always kind of when I feel like it rather than when I should do. What advice have you got that you can give me and other people in the similar position? Because I'm always saying, I just don't have the time. I've always got other things to do that, you know, I've got clients harassing me about this, that, and the other, and I've got to deal with that. And I never have the time to kind of work on promoting us through social media in any kind of measured way. So have you got any advice that you could maybe give me?
Something that I do, it's really easy to kind of neglect social media. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, I have the whirlwind of my job that just needs to get done. Something that I've seen work, and that when I was doing this, when CoSchedule was still a startup and I was the one writing social media messages on top of everything else marketing, I was like a one-person marketing shop for a long time, is just time blocking. Essentially what I did was I would get in, and right away in the morning I'd pour myself a cup of coffee, and it became a habit that I would just look at social stuff for the day. Basically just make sure that day's social media posting schedule was full, and I was taking advantage of posting to all the networks that we were posting to at the time. So that's, you know, take five. If you only do it 5 minutes a day, you keep on top of it, and it's not that big of a commitment either. So that's kind of what I would suggest there.
And I think, Mark, because that's where it kind of comes back to having the right tools. Because some of the things I see with you guys is that, you know, it's not a kind of job in itself in your minds, or it's not something, you know, you might post something if you think of it. And it just goes out in that moment. But having a scheduling tool like Buffer or CoSchedule or something along those lines, it just means that you can sit down whenever you want, fill up a kind of a list of things to go out, and then they post at the most relevant time. I mean, the great thing with these tools now is they even detect for you when the best time to send stuff out is.
Okay, I just need to be more of a grown-up, I guess. Turn it into a real job.
Yeah, and it's difficult because I think some people are naturally more inclined to use social media anyway. I mean, I think, I'm the kind of person that wants to share stuff, and it is naturally in my character to do that. So it kind of occurs to me more, and maybe I don't need to be quite so disciplined about it because I kind of do it instinctively. But if you're not someone that does it instinctively, yeah, the idea of setting aside a little bit of time seems very sensible to me.
I've already written that down as a note.
You won't do it. I know you won't do
it. I have a to-do.
I mean, of course... Sorry, go on.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, like, something about that, too, is, like, it sounds like such a simple idea, but something that, you know, I've learned from our CEO and co-founder, Garrett, he says this all the time, that the simplest approach is the best place to start. Mm. And with social media, with all, like, content marketing as a whole, with marketing as a whole, a lot of times it feels, like, so complicated that it's hard to know what to do. Mm. And that's kind of where I was at before, where I was kind of saying, just do fewer things and do fewer things better. And that's like the best approach. So like literally something as simple as saying, you know, after lunch, right when I get back to my desk, I'm just going to look at social stuff and kind of get that ready. Like starting to do that is, you know, it's an easy process. Therefore, it is more doable.
I think the other thing I'd say to you, Marcus, is which builds on the same idea, is maybe we just need to pick one network and focus on one. I mean, LinkedIn seems like the logical place really for Headscape and the kind of clients that you guys work with. So it might be better doing that than kind of trying to replicate what I used to do when I was at Headscape. Do you see what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, makes sense.
Mm. I mean, of course, the other problem is even once you carve out some time, a lot of the company social media updates I see are pretty dull and crappy, to be honest.
Ours wouldn't be. Ours would be really exciting.
I'm sure it would. It'd be all about cricket, Marcus, is the truth. Nothing to do with web design.
And guitars.
Yeah, exactly. What can people do to make those channels a little bit more engaging? I mean, what makes a good update?
Yeah, I think something that I think about there is just a very simple test. Like at CoSchedule, we use questions as frameworks to help us understand things or get into the minds of our users, our audience, our customers. Mm-hmm. And so a simple test here is like to ask yourself, what's in it for me? What's in it for me as your audience member that I actually care about this?
Yeah.
So another question I ask is that as an audience member, do I even care about this? And if you can't really... You know, if there's no value in your post, like, just don't post it. Mm. So, like, that goes for that. That goes all the way back into the content that you're sharing too. Like, Paul, you're saying that you use content marketing, so you're like creating these podcasts, right? You don't want to be creating a podcast that no one's going to care about anyway in the first place. Mm-hmm. So, draw out the value points from, you know, the speaking points or something that's a good takeaway from that episode and turn that into a message, something that'll captivate. This might even get further away from, you know, being social media, being dull, you know, these messages, but we need to be creating content that people will actually care about, and it all stems from that. Mm. So if you can draw out those sorts of points, that's where it's at.
What about humor? This always seems a fine line, okay? The example I give in the UK is that there's, I think they're in the US. Do you have Waterstones bookshops in the US? I'm not sure whether you do or not.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, so Waterstones are a big chain of bookshops here in the UK. And for a long time, there was one store, admittedly it was the Oxford Street store in London, which is a big store, but one store had like... Yeah, a huge number of followers, huge, ridiculous number, much bigger than the main corporate Twitter channel for the same bookstore. And the reason was is that the person running the social media channel for that particular bookstore was funny. You know, he for example, Waterstones used to have an apostrophe in their name, and they dropped it. And they removed the apostrophe, so it just Waterstones without the apostrophe. And, you know, the main corporate headquarters released a press release, you know, saying we have dropped the apostrophe. And everybody was up in arms because it was bad grammar. I mean, this is the kind of sad thing that people get angry about.
Sad.
Well, I'm sure you would be passionate about that, Marcus, but you are the kind of sad person I'm referring to. So anyway, meanwhile, the Oxford Street branch instead cut out a giant apostrophe and put it outside their door with a begging bowl and put a sign up saying, "We'll conjugate for, you know, for food." And and they lightened the whole thing. And while everybody was, you know, even somebody as anal and uptight as Marcus still would find that funny. And it kind of lightened the mood of the situation. So humour can work great, but it also, it's really, it can be dangerous as well. And it can backfire hugely. So I'm just interested in whether it's something you ever toy with.
Yeah, I mean, we love humor at CoSchedule, and we try to use it all the time. Actually, we just released a video for that Recue feature.
Oh, yeah.
That is, like, meant to be hilarious. It doesn't even show anything about the tool itself. It doesn't show screenshots or, like,
right.
the video from the app. It's just, like, this humorous video that's all about this guy who's, like, dealing with some really, really cruddy animation or automation out there.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, then the end is just like Recue, automation that actually works.
Right.
So we embrace that, and that video has been extremely popular. We just launched it, and our plan is to actually do a lot more around that.
Mm.
And I think the reason why humor works is, like, there's this, like, research report from the New York Times Customer Insight Group from a couple years ago, and they found 50%, just under 50% of people share content because it's entertaining, and they think that other people will find it also entertaining. So humor is definitely a part of that.
I think a lot of organizations shy away from it because they think, oh, we've got to be professional and grown up. But my response to that is always, well, the first ever tweet by the CIA was, "We can neither confirm nor deny that this is our first tweet." And, you know, you think if the CIA could joke, then pretty much anybody could add a bit of humor into their social feed.
Absolutely. And, like, something that I think about here is for those companies that are just worried about brand voice and tone and all of that BS, literally, like, the brand is made up of people, and you should let the people be the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, corporate voice doesn't connect with other people.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound human. And social media, like, as the name implies, is meant to help a brand, if we're approaching it from this perspective, is to humanize your brand. Mm. So humor is a really great way to actually do that.
Mm. Talking then of actually engaging with your audience, you know, social media should be interactive. It should be a two-way conversation. And I'm kind of interested in maybe some of the ways that you do that. You mentioned putting out a survey earlier, but are there other things that you do around that kind of stuff?
Yeah, with interaction, something that we do is we'll kind of monitor like keywords that are core to our product or service and how people are saying those, using them on social media, and then we can kind of connect with them that way. So, for example, on Twitter, we might follow the hashtag marketing calendar, just so we can kind of see what people are talking about there and know how they would want to use a marketing calendar or the challenges that they're having with a marketing calendar, and just kind of have those conversations that way.
Mm.
From there, we can answer those questions where they're happening, you know, whether it's on social media and blog post comments, in groups or forums, that sort of thing. So we look for the words that those people are using to try to interact there, I guess. Another thing that we do with interaction is CoSchedule, we create tons of content. Like, my team is the team that creates lots of blog posts. We create courses and webinars and all sorts of stuff meant to help marketers do what they do better. And so we get a lot of marketers who are big supporters of us and share our stuff on social media. And so we always make sure to thank those people. So we thank those promoters for sharing that content. And that's definitely a form of interaction of, like, we know that there are some big fans of us out there, and so we want to make sure that we show them the appreciation every single time they share our stuff.
And there's somebody who does that, you know, is out there sharing you and other people. It does make a big difference when someone just takes the time to say, "Hey, thanks for sharing that link," or "Thanks for mentioning us," or, you know, it's just courtesy, really, as much as anything else, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, you know, if someone gave you a gift, a lot of times you send a thank you card, right? It's exactly like that. Mm. Only it's in the world of you're building these relationships with people online, and that's the number one way to use social media in my mind, is to build connections that can ultimately at some point result in building trust. And if there's anything that we know about marketing, the classic quip is people buy from people they know, like, and trust. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about humanizing that brand, right? Like, let people know that there's a person behind that. Something that we do, and we thank those promoters for sharing our stuff, is we do sign-offs with people's first names.
Yeah.
So that it's like, hey, Leah actually wrote this. We don't use any canned, like, copy-paste stuff.
Oh,
she literally writes them all out. Yeah.
That makes an enormous... I hate canned responses. And you know when you're getting a canned response, you can just sense it, can't you?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Like, so if we're going to talk about marketing or automation stuff, social media automation, like, there are specific forms of it that are just like no bueno, and that would be one of them, is like auto things. Mm. Like, no one likes that. Ugh.
Yeah, nasty. talking about nasty, the downside of social media, it's amazing in many, many ways. And you get this enormous reach, and you can talk directly to your users and to potential customers, which is all great. But it doesn't take much, he says, out of personal and bitter experience. To put your foot in it. And every now and again, you are going to upset people and you are going to face criticism. And I think this is something that maybe puts a lot of people off from trying humor or engaging too much, is they're afraid of what's going to happen.
It's a reason, one of the reasons why I tend to stay off Twitter is because I'll write tweets and I'll delete 19 out of 20 of them, thinking,
really?
Who cares? Or, ooh, should I be saying that? Or... you know, just that kind of thing. I censor myself.
See, now this is interesting because I'm now wondering what evil thoughts are constantly going around your head that are so horrendous that you don't feel able to share.
No, it's nothing like that. It's more a case of, do I want to be, you know, it might be a mild criticism of something. So you think, well, I don't really want to be criticizing people.
Yeah.
But actually, other people might be pleased to hear that you're criticizing the thing that they don't like. But
yeah.
It's a tricky one. So, but that's me. I tend
You're
to...
You're overthinking
kind of
it.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, so Nathan, I mean, you guys, I'm sure every brand has come in for some criticism at some point about something they've done, you know, when you change pricing or whatever else. I mean, how do you typically deal with it?
Yeah, I think, this is a really interesting topic because... I would say if you're not making some people upset, you're probably not doing it right, honestly,
yeah.
Because it's like the second that you try to please everybody, the messages and the stuff that you're creating is so watered down that no one's going to care about it to begin with.
Mm.
It's good to go into social media with an opinion, and actually controversial content tends to perform really, really well on social media, which means you're going to make some people upset, whereas you're going to make the people who really do care about that stuff and share your stance, they're going to be really excited. And controversy doesn't have to be always negative. It's basically making people question a behavior, a belief, or a sense of belonging.
Mm.
And so, you know, something there as far as social media goes, like, is sharing content like 10 reasons your marketing calendar sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Like stuff like that is like, oh, that, you know, why you're making me question a belief that my marketing calendar is awesome. So I'm going to want to click through. There's actually a lot of research that proves that that generates a lot more traffic back to the content that you're sharing when you have a perspective like that.
But do you think that's almost kind of getting into the realms of clickbait type behavior, where you're almost, you know, baiting people and kind of winding them up on purpose. Is there where's the line there? I mean, how do you decide that, you know, it's okay to express an opinion and you might drive a lot of traffic from doing it, but are you just alienating readers when they come in?
Yeah, that's a good, really good question. It's only clickbait if you don't fulfill the promise within your content.
Yeah, fair enough.
And so, like, in that example, like, 10 reasons your editorial calendar sucks and how to make it the best, if that's your promise, how to make it the best, when someone clicks through, you better make sure you follow through on that promise. And actually teach them how to do it on their own. And teach them why you would say that your calendar sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, there are elements of the copywriting, I guess, that make people click. But the reason why clickbait has come around is because it is based on psychology and based on reasons that have worked really well for years since the time of Ogilvy. These things are not new. It's just that we're seeing a lot more of it because there's a lot more content being published every single day.
Which brings me to the very last question that I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, we're all producing so much content now and we're putting a lot of effort into that. How do you measure success from that point of view? You know, are you focusing primarily on traffic driven or conversion, or how people are sharing that content in turn and whether the sentiments of them sharing it are positive or negative? What kind of metrics do you tend to focus on?
Yeah, this is an awesome question because just this week I had people walk up to me at a mixer here in Fargo, North Dakota, and ask me, "Hey, how do you measure the ROI from social media?"
Yeah,
and I can literally do that. When we do Facebook ads here at CoSchedule, and so when you put money into something, you need to measure the return on it, right? You can apply those same principles from return on ad spend into return on social shares. It is a thing that you can do, but that's like saying something like, you know, how we think it works is that we share something amazing, people click on it, people give us money. And the way that social media marketing works and the way that content marketing works is that you have this idea where you have someone following you. They're going to read and promote. And basically they need some time. You're building a relationship with your followers through your content that you're sharing, through the social media posts you're writing. And it's not going to be like, I shared this one tweet then earned me $10 or whatever it is. You can't just share one tweet and expect a huge return on it. It takes some time. And so the way that I think about social media and the way that I measure this is that I actually just think about it as social media is the way to build trust with an audience. It's not about a return at the time. It maybe the better question to ask is like, what's the cost of not maintaining an active presence on social media? No matter if you're there or not, people are talking about your brand. They're talking about your industry. They're talking about the solution that they're hoping someone is building for them. And it's just an expectation these days that like companies participate on the social networks where their customers are actively participating. So, you know, like think about it that way. The way that we see it at CoSchedule and the way that we measure it is just like audience engagement and share of voice. We want to be present where our audience is, and that's the way we look at it. So there's not like a specific metric that we look at, but it's at the very top of a funnel, if that makes sense.
That's so great to hear, because one of the reasons I think why I'm reluctant to put effort into it is because we're just a small web design agency that does kind of a number of quite kind of large projects, a small number of large projects. So we're not trying to sell thousands or millions of small items. We're just kind of, it's just about kind of to get our name across, get people to know us, get to know our brand. And I've always been a kind of like, you know, is this really worth it? Is there any kind of value to it? So to hear somebody like you, Nathan, saying that your view is it's about, you know, getting your name out there, building your brand, is really kind of encouraging and making me think, yes, I need to pull my finger out.
So it didn't count I've been saying it for years then, Marcus. That didn't count. Yeah, it had to be Nathan, did it?
Yeah.
Well, like, it's something that's interesting there is, like, again, like, people, I think people are scared to start something like this because they think that there has to be this active return on ROI. And, like I said, you can measure that, but starting and doing something and just kind of seeing what works and what sticks, that's better than not doing it at all. Mm. Like at CoSchedule 2, just to relate a little bit more, is when we started in 2013, we had like zero email subscribers, zero customers, zero page views, nothing. We started by just publishing content and sharing it on social media. And then we started. It wasn't perfect at the beginning. In fact, we probably did some things that people would just downright frown upon now. But we started, and we were able to build some skills around that. Like, we were able to see what does work, what doesn't work. And what at that time, we were all about getting traffic, right? And, you know, we've since honed these skills and honed this you know, traction in to be like where we're at today, which is, you know, multi-million-dollar business. We have 250,000 email subscribers on our email list. We started with zero like 3 years ago. And a lot of it has to do with this idea behind just knowing that social media was one avenue to introduce our logo to people who had no idea who we were.
The whole thing about, you know, what would be the consequences if you didn't do it is also quite an interesting one. I mean, for example, this podcast is a great example of a type of content marketing where it's actually very hard to measure the ROI of it. But we know, I mean, we took a break from doing this podcast a few years back. And Marcus, it had a negative impact, didn't it? We saw the consequences of that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how negative, you'll never know. But we did get,
what surprised me is it didn't just affect the podcast. It also affected traffic on the blog and, you know, and social media followings and newsletter signups. All of these things seem to be very interconnected with one another, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, it's a slightly scary thing for me is that if you start doing one, two, three things and then you think, oh, I don't want to do that one anymore, then that affects the other two. But
yeah,
you
know. But don't start too many things.
yes. I go back to Nathan's original advice, do one thing well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And I mean, with social media, as far as that, the conversation is happening. It's just a matter of, do you want to participate in it?
Yeah. Which that's what it comes down to, doesn't it, really? You know, people are talking about your products and services. You can either choose to engage or you can choose not to. And I think it's fairly obvious which of the two people should be doing. All right, Nathan. So where can people find out maybe a little bit about more about you and a bit more about CoSchedule and that kind of thing? Because you've got a really good blog.
Yeah. You can definitely check out the blog. It's coschedule.com/blog. We do a lot with that blog. To basically our goal is to publish the best marketing content on the internet, or why even do it. So there's probably something for everyone to learn a little bit more about content marketing or project management, even social media stuff that we've been talking about there.
Cool. Great. That's really good. And we will include the URL for that in the show notes, but I'm sure a quick Google will also get you to that point. All right. Thank you very much, Nathan, for joining us. And hopefully we'll talk to you again before too long.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate this. It was a fun convo.
Okay, Marcus. So what have you been thinking about after that interview? What have you been thinking that you need to do?
Getting myself organized.
Yes.
which is kind of, I mean, I'm not that organized a person with my job generally. So to be overly, I don't like being nailed down to certain things, but the idea of taking a little bit of time every day, I think is a really good one. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it yet. But I think I need to pick the one thing, which I don't know what that is yet either, although we talked about LinkedIn, and work out what I'm going to do so that I can kind of like, say, right, this is your 10 minutes or 15 minutes every day or whatever, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday, let's say, I don't know. And not sit there and go twiddle my thumbs and go, well, what shall I do? I need to think in advance. Right, you can do this, 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 or this.
Yeah.
And pick one.
And how and build up a list of things you could do. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Paul, as you said earlier in the show, you're going to give me a whole bunch of things that I can pick from next week.
yeah, not necessarily, because what I'm going to do next
is what
week,
you do. Yeah,
yeah, it's okay. What I do. And obviously, I'm using lots of different channels while you're going to focus in on LinkedIn, which I think is a really good idea, if I'm honest. Because the other good thing about LinkedIn as well is that you can post blog posts directly to LinkedIn. So, you know, the blog posts that you tend to post to Headscape are longer pieces, but maybe you could post shorter pieces to LinkedIn. You don't have the same word restriction as something like Twitter, for example.
Yeah.
So that's kind of thing. And you can also upload case studies. It's a very good place to put case studies. It's a great place to share little videos even. You know, all kinds of things you could do on LinkedIn. So it's quite a versatile platform. I still don't like the interface very much. It's a little bit messy and hard to find stuff. But I find it... A lot of people kind of screw their nose up at it because it's not hip and trendy. But let's be honest... Most of our clients aren't very hip and trendy.
Yeah, good point.
And I don't mean that in a rude way.
No, just neither we aren't, they aren't. You know, we're sort of people are getting on a bit in life. Not that our clients are particularly, but we're less likely to appeal to rock bands.
Yeah,
these days.
Exactly. and also, even if even if the people we're dealing with are hip and trendy, and oftentimes the actual client, the person that you're interacting with, does know their stuff, is very digitally literate, but they tend to use LinkedIn for the same reason we're talking about using it, which is that their colleagues, the people that they're trying to work with, are all on LinkedIn. So I actually think, yeah, and also there's so much noise now on other social networks. And so much personal stuff and so many memes and things that actually, if you're B2B, being, you know, focusing on LinkedIn makes a lot of sense, I think. Anyway, that's my 2 cents. Okay, let's talk about our second sponsor, which is Gather Content, obviously, that have supported the whole season and are absolutely awesome.
What do you use them for?
Me?
No, what does one use them for?
I was just trying
to be funny.
Oh, I see. You use them for gathering content.
There you go.
I get it now. Well, doesn't it make a pleasant change?
Well, yes.
When actually the product name describes what they do.
Mm-hmm. Although, what was it earlier? Dustin TV.
Dustin TV. I mean, what's that about? Boag World. I mean, honestly.
Yeah. Headscape.
Exactly. Yeah. Headscape the hairdressers.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
That's what we do in the evening on the weekends.
Yeah, that's how you make your real money.
Yes, quite.
So, Gather Content, great for managing and gathering content you need for your website, your app, social media campaign, whatever, really. So I personally tend to use it when I'm working with a client on a very content-heavy project. Because in my experience, those kinds of projects almost always are guaranteed to be delayed. And they're almost always guaranteed to be delayed because of the content and getting the content out of people. So, in fact, you know, I often say that content delivery is the single biggest barrier for delivering a project on time. I think that's probably fair to say, isn't it, Marcus?
I would definitely agree with that. I think it might be getting a bit better because it seems that clients that we work with tend to have more dedicated digital, in air quotes, people.
Yeah, that is true.
But there's still an underestimation of the task, especially because everybody wants to rewrite all their content now.
Which, to be honest, I think is quite a good thing that everybody wants to rewrite their content, because those days of migrating content across just were an embarrassment, really. You know, you're just slapping a new coat of paint on the same old crumbling facade.
You still have to do some of that. I mean, like news and news in particular is something that you'd want to kind of migrate over.
That's fair enough. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I'm not saying you should never migrate content, but you should do it in an intelligent way, I guess.
Yes.
Anyway, when you do need to rewrite content, or even to some degree migrate, if you want to kind of reorganize it and reshuffle it a little bit, you're probably better off bringing it into Gather Content and then from there into your new CMS. Okay. You know, so it's an app that was very much born out of the frustration of an agency, pretty much like Headscape, that created it, and it's now turned into their business. And there's such a really great team of people. They're very open, very responsive. And it's used by thousands and thousands of teams worldwide. They've done so well for themselves, and I deeply hate them for it. they've lived the dream, haven't they? You know, it's a UK agency that have then switched across to an app, and they've done really well out of it. Bastards, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't mind, actually, now. I mean, that
don't
was...
You don't feel... I'm quite happy doing
agency work. Although, when we were at Smashing Comp a couple of weeks ago, what are their names? Anton and Irene, who were kind of very, very hip.
They're very hip, aren't they?
Yeah.
They make me feel very unhip. Yeah,
based in New York in a loft and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, a lot of the things they said really hit home with me. And it was they had kind of met up with some of their... their idols from the 80s when they were at school and that kind of thing. And these guys, these graphic designers, are still working now, but they're not working for any clients.
Okay.
They're in their 70s and 80s now, and they just do design work for the fun of it. And what the whole kind of angle of their talk was is that they're trying to kind of balance client work with fun, again, air quotes, work. And it really hit home with me with what I could do with, you know, what I might do with my life in 10, 15 years' time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, yeah, very, very interesting.
Yeah, that's nice. Totally irrelevant to gather content. We are supposed to be doing their sponsor slot.
I can't even remember why we went there.
Because I was talking about switching from agency work across to doing an app, which is what they've done.
Yeah, but I guess, but yeah, the point there was... that they're still doing client work, but less of it.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be an either or, which I think is, yeah, I like that. I like that balance, because I like the variety, if I'm honest. I wouldn't want to get rid of client work at all.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's kind of where I am at. You know, some of the stuff I do is client work, but a lot of it's not actually these days. A lot of it's like writing or speaking or that kind of thing, which is a little bit different. But there's a part of me that I quite like the idea of working on something like Gather Content, you know, taking an app and evolving it over time and refining it and improving it, you know, because they're always doing, updates and new features. And I love all that stuff.
Yeah. I think it would be great, but it's a bit, I'm sure I've made this analogy in the past, but I think it's like trying to have a hit record. It's kind of. Yeah, you might put your heart and soul in it and a lot of work into it, but I think many people do that. And, as we did with Get Sign Off, loads of effort and money went into that and it didn't work in the end. And it's I'm kind of the feeling now that unless something comes along that absolutely blows me off my feet, I'm quite happy with the way we're doing things.
Yeah, that's true. And also the grass is always greener on the other side, isn't it? So it swings and roundabouts. Anyway, Gather Content. Give it a go, guys. If for no other reason than we've completely butchered their sponsor section and you feel sorry for them, I think that would be a good reason to go and check it out. So it's perfect if you're doing a website redesign, if you're building a new website, if you're just expanding a new section and you've got a lot of content to gather and bring together and edit and, you know, sort and all the rest of it. So you can get a 30-day free trial with no credit card required by going to gathercontent.com/BoagWorld. I'm glad that they're a cool and laid-back sponsor. That's all I can say. So talking of cool apps that you should check out, I want to, just before we wrap up, share a few ones that relate to social media and you managing your social media. I mean, there are two straight off the bat that are going to be obvious. One is CoSchedule, because we've just done a whole interview with someone from CoSchedule. It really is worth checking out, and is a platform that I've been using, as you gathered from the interview, since it was in beta, and absolutely love it. Another platform I've been using since it was in beta is Buffer. I find that Buffer is a really good way of dealing with those more impromptu kind of updates. You know when you sit down in an evening and you read a load of stuff, And, you know, you're sitting down in one go and you read a load of things and you want to share all the different things you want, but you don't want them all to go out at the same time. Buffer is really good with that. Although I have to say, now with this requeue feature in CoSchedule, I'm beginning to switch more across to using CoSchedule for that kind of stuff. But Buffer has got some really good sharing extensions built into the iPhone that make it really easy. So I'm kind of torn at the moment. So I'm still paying for both, but eventually I suspect I'll go one way. Anyway, the other tools that I did want to focus on a little bit more are a tool called BuzzSumo. Now, BuzzSumo is... How do you describe what BuzzSumo is? It's a place to find out what people are talking about on social media, right? And a chance to see how different kind of content types are performing, what topics are very popular, and who's talking about those topics. So you could go along to BuzzSumo and, I don't know, I'm typing into it web design podcast, for example. And what it's going to come back with is a load of blog posts, a load of social media updates. So I'm seeing the 12 best web design podcasts. Let's see if I'm in the list, because if I'm not, I'm going to be very upset. And you can see how many times those articles have been shared. So it's a great way of finding out what kind of content is shared really well and that kind of stuff. Let me just scroll down this list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We're not in the list. I'm really sad now. Anyway, you get the idea. So that's BuzzSumo. It's really great. And you can filter. You can say, you know, what's been hot over the last year? What's, you know, popular right now? You know, for different countries, you can filter by different types of content, all kinds of things. So it's a very, very powerful way of getting inspiration, going back to what you were saying earlier, Marcus, about... you know, what do you write about? What do you cover? You can go along here and just type in, okay, so I know we need to be writing more on user experience. You type in user experience, and then you'll see all the articles that have been posted, over, you know, about user experience, and it'll maybe inspire you with some of the kind of stuff you could write too. All right?
Yep.
So that's BuzzSumo. The other one I wanted to mention is Mention.com, and that's great for monitoring what people are saying about your products, what people are saying about your company, what people are saying in your industry, and what people are saying about your competitors. So it's great for like social media monitoring and support. So, you know, when you, I don't know, slag off some product online and within seconds they come back to you and go, I'm sorry you feel like that, you know.
Yeah.
That's because they're using a tool like mention.com, so it's worth checking out. Especially, you know, it's got a kind of range of different plans, all the, you know, way from a very basic plan that's about $30 just for one user, all the way up to kind of enterprise level where you're trying to managing a big brand and how many times it's mentioned online. Because it'll give you things. It won't just tell you how many times your brand is mentioned or the specifics of what is said, but you can get stats as well. So you can do things like, you know, look at, I don't know, say if you launch a website, and you could monitor what people say about that website over, say, a 3-month period and get a report back about whether, generally speaking, those are positive or negative comments, because it can pick up on sentiment in mentions and that kind of stuff. So it's a very cool app. Check it out. All right. I think that about wraps it up for this week. As I said, next week we're going to talk about my own content marketing strategy, what I do, and hopefully share a few ideas about how we go about doing that. But until then, we just have Marcus's joke.
It's Ian Lasky's joke. Thank you, Ian. A sign in the baker's shop said, "All cakes, 50p. I pointed to one and asked for it, and the owner said, "That'll be £1, sir." I pointed to the sign and he said, ah, yes, but that's Madeira cake.
That is technically a joke. Well done. Okay, and on that just glorious end of the show, we'll sign off for now and see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.